Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
It is a major as grand as they come. 2 weeks of high-octane, in-your-face madness. This is New York City.
I'm super excited to be back here in New York.
It's a great city, electric city.
Really fun to be at the U.S. Open, being an American.
Being in New York, I love it, honestly.
It's New York City. You never get bored here, that's for sure.
This city was born to breed excitement. And this year, the masses come to the U.S. Open to see the greatest tennis tournament in the world. What a moment!
A showreel type tennis.
Oh, what a shot! Absolutely incredible. And why wouldn't you get up to a ball?
In New York, it is the most electric atmosphere in tennis. I'm looking forward to it.
The fans are unbelievable here. Probably the best fans we have in tennis is right here.
I feel excited to come out on courts and see how the crowd is going to be this year.
It's New York. It's so loud. It's so crazy.
I don't even know what to say right now. I'm beyond happy. I'm almost in tears. I can't believe it.
Super excited to play my first match here in the US Open again. Let's get it.
You're gonna kind of have your chances, and you have to be ready to go all in.
The tennis world is once again in an empire state of mind. Welcome to TC Live at the US Open. It's been said that London is satisfied and Paris is resigned, but New York is always hopeful. Today, that hope begins for 128 men's and women's singles players. The best in the world won't be satisfied with anything other than conquering the concrete jungle. Big names taking the court on Arthur Ashe Stadium. Returning women's champ Iga Swiatek first up, followed by an All-American match between last year's semifinalist Frances Tiafoe and Kalamazoo winner Lerner Tien. Then the night session begins with Coco Gauff trying to become the first American teenager to reach back-to-back U.S. Open quarterfinals since Serena Williams. And the return of Novak Djokovic playing in New York for the first time since making the final 2 years ago. Players arriving on site. There's your 2012 champ. Andy Murray made the third round last year. Got those good vibes going in New York City. And how about Maria Sakkari coming in as the eighth seed? Made the semifinals here in 2021. Has lost in the first round of the past two majors. So looking to find some confidence in New York. Come on in. Great to have you here with us on TC Live. Steve Weissman alongside a couple Grand Slam champs. We've got the former world number six, Chanda Rubin. We've got legendary coach Paul Anacone. We've got journalist extraordinaire John Wertheim, and we are with you every single day for 2 hours each morning leading up to first ball. Chanda, your first time on the couch.
It is.
Comfy?
I'm enjoying it, Steve. I want to lean back and relax a little bit, but I know, you know, I got to stay a little buttoned up. But this is nice. I like the new scenery.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We go four wide for TC Live at the U.S. Open.
I feel like I'm big time now. I feel that I'm ready for it, too. I'm ready for
big
it.
Big time, Chanda. Come on.
I mean, can you believe it's already the U.S. Open?
It's amazing. I mean, we always say that the years fly by. My parents told me as you get older, it goes faster. I think I'm starting to believe that, but it's going to be a great 2 weeks.
Feels like our Wimbledon post-match wrap. We really had 6 weeks go by since we last did this at a major, but the tennis calendar rolls on, and so do we.
Year's final major. We are ready to go, and the players will be as well in a couple of hours. But before we look forward, we take a peek back at what happened last year on the women's side. Paul, Iga Swiatek taking out Ons Jabeur for her first U.S. Open title.
Oh, boy, this was something special for Iga Swiatek, showing everyone, you know what, I can play on other surfaces than the clay. She was spectacular all last year, continues to learn, get better, and she is one of the most dictatorial groundstrokers out there. She's going to be fun to watch. What about these odds?
She is the odds-on favorite per FanDuel, John. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's more about reputation and defending champ than recent form. But, you know, last year when she won that title, she was about 70%. She, by her own admission, did not play her best tennis. What kind of confidence must that give you? And then look at Coco getting into the number three spot as far as favorites go. That is momentum right there.
I'd put some Chanda bucks, some real bucks on Coco and Jesse there. On the men's side, Carlos Alcaraz won his first major last year, Chanda, becoming the second teenager to win the men's singles title in the Open era.
Yeah, I mean, we knew this guy was going to win majors, multiple majors. Didn't know maybe when it might happen, but last year's U.S. Open was a dream run. And he had to go the distance in three of his seven matches. That quarterfinal against Sinner was the incredible match, I think, of the tournament for Alcaraz, and he continues to be impressive.
He certainly does. Because he's not defending any points, Novak Djokovic will replace Alcaraz as number one by winning just his first match in New York. But, John, what do you make of these odds?
That pretty much tracks the rankings. There are two guys who are well ahead of the rest of the field. That's reflected here. Medvedev, of course, has won this title. Sinner coming off that semifinal at Wimbledon at number four. But, yeah, I mean, I think realistically you've got two favorites, and the odds reflects what the fans are talking about.
All right. So the big question everyone wants to know, Paul, who is more likely to repeat as champion this year? It hasn't been done in a while on either the men's or women's side, Carlitos or Iga.
I'm leaning towards Carlitos, although I don't believe either one of them are my picks. So I'm going to – is that what they call a tease, Steve?
Yeah, because predictions are coming up later in the show.
Okay, so I'll just tease it and leave it like that.
All right, what do you think?
Paul is a true professional.
I'm
learning every day how to do this thing. I love it. You know, I tend to agree. I think it's going to be tough for each of them to repeat, but I'm leaning Carlos Alcaraz as well. You know, I think for Iga Świątek, it's been a little tougher summer. She's had some losses, maybe some unexpected results, but she's so motivated. So I think that's going to spur her on even more. But I think I'm leaning Alcaraz in terms of the potential to repeat. I'm hoping for a Djokovic-Alcaraz final, I think, as we all are.
Aren't we all doing that?
I think that the nerds would say if one player only has to win 14 sets and the other has to win 21, she's got the better odds. But no, I think Carlos has a real chance. I mean, no male has repeated since Roger Federer 07, 08, and he never won again after that. So it's been 15 years since a male player has come here to defend a title and done it successfully, which is an interesting bit of stats.
Yeah, the longest drought. I don't know if this is the Wertheim stat of the day, but the longest drought of any major on the men's side, and nobody's repeated on the women's side since Serena Williams. So it's been a minute in New York City, a New York minute. By the way, you've heard of a buzz cut, but what about the old fuzz cut? Men and women are using the same tennis ball, Paul, this year at the U.S. Open. That's not regular duty.
No one knew that I could do this while I was out on the side of the court with my challenged hairline. They didn't think I could do, Steve, but look at what I did.
That's impressive. Spectacular. Yeah, that's commitment.
Extra
right
felt?
That's
extra duty.
Extra duty. Okay. I need some
heavy
extra
duty.
I need one of you guys to try that style.
You wait till you see
me tomorrow. That's going to be the challenge.
You wait till you see me tomorrow.
Okay, all right.
Be careful what you wish
balls,
for.
Please.
All right. That's how we get off and running. Day one, TC Live at the U.S. Open. So much more still to come here as we take you through the next couple hours. Coco Gauff coming off the biggest title of her career. Our experts tell you if she can get her first major. Plus, they've already played three times this year. Chanda says, we won't afford. Is Alcaraz Djokovic an inevitable showdown? And John goes unstrung on the incredible rise of Tennis Channel's very own Chris Eubanks. TC Live before day one of the U.S. Open. Just getting rolling.
TC Live at the U.S. Open is brought to you in part by Tennis Point, the official racket sports retailer of the ATP Tour.
Chanda, John, Paul, and Steve back on TC Live. A reminder to download the U.S. Open app to follow your favorite players, track the latest scores, stats, match highlights, player news, and much more. It is available in the App Store and Google Play Store. Time now to go inside the press room with some of the top contenders on the men's side.
I want to say, you know, adds a bit more the fact that I haven't played here for 2 years. It's just the feeling is pretty much the same. There's always, you know, this expectations and excitement and ambition to win the title. So that's pretty much the same this year.
I'm not focused on the defending champion, the points or whatever. I'm just focused on show my best level, try to improve in every practice, and let's see how it's gonna be the tournament.
Feeling
pretty well physically, mentally. Want to try to play better than I did last couple of weeks. And let's see how it's going to go.
All three of those men have won the title before. Let's start with the three-time champ, Novak Djokovic, back after missing last year's tournament, looking to get to major number 24, tying Margaret Court. He added two more majors this year. What makes you believe he'll add another, Paul?
Because he's Novak. I mean, there's no other way to describe what he's been able to do for so many years, and we know what he can do on a hard court. We saw what he did in Cincinnati, and there's no reason it won't be more.
Hot take, I think he's motivated, energized, invigorated by this challenge he's gotten from this 20-year-old, from Carlos Alcaraz. I think, obviously, lost the Wimbledon final, but I think in the long run, Carlos Alcaraz is a very good development for Novak Djokovic and his motivation. He showed it 8 days ago in Cincinnati, and I'm picking him like you, Paul. I think 24 is 13 days away.
Yeah, I think for most players, it'd be a disadvantage not having played here last year. For Novak Djokovic, you almost feel like it makes him fresher, gives him just a little more oomph to his game, and it's unbelievable the physical shape he's been in, how he continues to be motivated to push against matchups, against players who are so much younger, and then the shirt tear. I mean, that's next level, Steve.
Novak Djokovic. We've seen him do it in the past. I mean, that reaction after that win was something you see after he wins a major. What edge does that match, that one of the best matches we've seen all year, give him potentially as he could play Carlos once again in the final?
Well, considering they played 3 hours and 50 minutes for three sets, if they play the final series, that could be 7.5 hours or 8 hours.
Could be.
I mean, the most amazing thing to me about Novak is that as great as he is, he doesn't back down from any challenges. And you said it, John. I think the fact that Carlos is playing such great tennis is great for him. I mean, he's not afraid to win. He's not afraid to lose. He loves to prove himself. And with everything he's done, he really doesn't even have to prove himself, but he thrives on that. And that's why these 2 weeks in New York are going to be really important for him, and that's why he loves it.
They all love it. And the returning champ is Carlos Alcaraz, and he is the youngest number one seed in U.S. Open history, Chanda. He actually says he was a better player than last year, tour leading six titles this season, including Wimbledon, where he beat Novak Djokovic. So the question is, how does he handle those expectations defending a major title for the first time in his life?
I mean, we heard him in that interview. He seems to have the right mindset, thinking of it as a new tournament. It's not about defending. It's about playing your best tennis on this occasion, in this space, against these different opponents that he's going to face. And I think that's the right formula. He's got a terrific team around him. I think that helps with the experience as well. So, you know, he's got an advantage in so many different ways, apart from just the physicality of his game and how special he is on court. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he gets things started, but he seems to be rounding into really good form. There were some questions after Wimbledon. He went back, he played on red clay, played Hopman Cup, maybe shouldn't have done that. Was he going to be a little tired? Is that going to take a little more of a toll? I think where he is right now after that final in Cincy, I think he's got to feel pretty good getting things underway here.
Sometimes we talk about the pressure of defending. That usually happens when the player hasn't done much since and their ranking is going to go off a cliff if they don't do well. Carlos Alcaraz will be just fine. And I think also the fact that Novak will overtake him at number one no matter what, he doesn't have to worry about that. I think he's in a pretty good frame of mind. I just think that Cincinnati result, I think, really could loom large. Not just the result, but the way it played out. The fact that Novak, at the end, was the superior player physically. I think that might stick in the head of Alcaraz a little bit.
Yeah, he said the one thing that resonates with me the most. My least favorite term in sports is defending. You know, nothing happens if he doesn't win this year. Not going to take away last year's title. All it's about is accumulation. And I think that's what great players realize. And I think you're right about I really think that it was important for Novak to win in a big moment like that, to come through under pressure. I don't think there's scar tissue. I think he's too young for that. But my biggest question for Carlitos is going to be, how does it last over seven matches? I still think he started cramping a little bit at the end of the match with Novak. We saw what happened in Paris. He's growing. He's 20 years of age. There's a lot of stuff going on in his body with metabolism and growth. And how hot is it going to be in New York, and how quickly and efficiently is he going to get through matches? Talent-wise, he is off the charts to me, the most talented player on the planet.
So it's going to be a fun couple of weeks.
Also, tougher half of the draw. He could face Jannik Sinner as well as Daniil Medvedev on his side. Novak Djokovic, a little bit easier, you would say. From the top seed to the top-ranked American man, that would be none other than Taylor Fritz. Big spread in Esquire magazine. Got two titles this year, but he has not, John, made it past the third round of a major this season and hasn't made it past the third round of the Open ever. Why is that going to change?
This is a nice chance to salvage his season. Look, Taylor's a realist. He knows that you make your marks at these majors. He's 4-4 over his last 8 matches at majors, but we know what he can do at hard courts. We know he's a good domestic player. He does well in North America and in the U.S. And I think he's in Novak's quarter, so we have to temper expectation a little bit, but I think he definitely gets beyond the third round, which is the best he's done this year at a major.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the mindset. And New York can be a tough tournament. You know, for some players, you either like it or you don't. It can be a complete change in terms of, you know, how your routines are, how you look to, you know, go about your tennis, how do you prepare. You've got to make some adjustments. I mean, it is truly craziness. But it's a great part of the year. And if you embrace it, and I think Taylor Fritz is looking to do that, I think, you know, this part of his career, having the last couple of seasons that he's had, really growing into playing at the top, you know, as the top American and at the top of the sport. I think that's what he's going to embrace, and I think that may be why it could be different this year. And he's got a good first-round match, I think a comfortable first-round match against a familiar foe, a fellow American. So I think how you start is critical in New York and work your way into the tournament. So I think that can be good for Fritz this year.
Playing an American at the U.S. Open has not been good historically for Taylor Fritz. 0-3 against fellow Americans, lost to Brandon Holt first round last year. Paul, you're a part of the coaching team for Taylor Fritz. What have you all been working on leading up to this first-round match?
Well, look, I think the most important thing is the mental disposition for all the players, in particular for Taylor at this, his national event. Michael Russell's done an amazing job as a coach. He's a great coach. He understands the mental and the strategic that come into play. We talked about it a lot last week. I got to spend time with Michael and Wolfgang Oswald's done a great job taking care of Taylor's body. Look at how much Taylor's played this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's played a ton of matches. He's ready to play. I think the fact that he didn't do spectacularly in Canada and Cincinnati is actually a blessing for Taylor Fritz. And the reason he's 9 in the world right now, guys, isn't because his top level is good. The reason he's 9 in the world is because his average level got better last year. Okay, so he has to trust that in a major and has to know that he can get through whatever the situation is, play within himself, and trust the moment and realize, yeah, it's a U.S. Open, but there's a lot of tournaments down the road. If he can gain that perspective and free himself up and trust, he'll do just fine.
It's just another major.
Just another major.
Just another chance to win one of these turns. By the way, Taylor and all the Americans, it's the 20-year anniversary of Andy Roddick, right, the last American to win a major singles title on the men's side. We'll see if one of them can get it done. We're going to break down the women's field when we come back. The summer of Coco has been heating up. Is the time now for golf's first major title? Our experts let you know when TC Live returns.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This girl will win majors in the future. I'm putting my money down right now.
In her 8th try, Coco Gauff finally slays the dragon.
We see the odds for the US Open now.
be the best here in Cincinnati.
What a summer it's been for Coco Gauff.
That's right, Lance. It's been a hot Coco summer. Gauff has won 11 of her last 12 matches, including two titles. Let's go inside the press room with her and the other top women's contenders.
It's been a great couple weeks for me, and just trusting myself. Obviously, you know, I have the new team around me, so seeing a different perspective can sometimes just change things completely. So I think I have a new perspective, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
I don't know if it's – I don't feel like any more confident than other times, to be honest. Again, tennis is so week to week. I mean, I won Montreal, and then I got bageled and lost. So I think I go into looking at it as a new week, new challenges, new things to try to improve on, new ways to try and problem solve. That can be hard around a slam when there's a lot of excitement. So hopefully I can use that to my advantage.
I'm happy that I had time to practice a little bit more and to work on some technical stuff. But I'm really, you know, happy with my performance in Montreal and Cincinnati. So I get more like positive vibes for sure than before last year's tournament. But, you know, being a defending champion is not easy. So I'm kind of taking it easy and trying to do everything step by step.
Let's start our discussion with Coco Gauff. She's only lost three sets since Wimbledon. So playing spectacular tennis, obviously got past Iga Świątek in Cincinnati. Shanda, do you think that singular victory was even more important than raising the trophy for her?
I think it was. You know, I think that got her, you know, to the trophy and to have that mindset and that belief. But the, you know, the hurdle of Iga Świątek was huge. And you look at so many draws where, you know, she was in Iga's section or they were meeting in the quarters, and, you know, Grand Slams included, Roland Garros last year in the final. This was a huge hurdle for Coco Gauff during the week. And once she got over that hurdle, everything else, I think, seemed a little simpler. Even though Muhova was playing some terrific tennis, she's a tricky player, but she's starting to handle these different styles. She's starting to have the mindset Gauff is in terms of going after shots forehand and backhand. We talked about it during Cincy, where she was looking to run around backhands and hit forehands. You would have never seen that in Gauff's game, you know, even a year ago, even, you know, a few months ago. I think that Wimbledon loss, sometimes you have your lowest moments and you don't know when one of your biggest moments is going to be around the corner. That's tennis. I think it's the mindset she has of continuing to pick herself up and be positive, focus on the right things, and again, having a good team around her, adding some people to her coaching box. I think that has helped. But in a short period of time, you've got to give most of, you know, the reasons for the results to the player, because it was there. It just needed just maybe a little, you know, push, maybe saying something in a slightly different way. And I think for Gauff, everything's coming together at just the right time.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest thing for a superstar that's that young is to manage kind of plateauing. And as great as she is, she's plateaued a little bit. And so many people expected so much so quickly from her. I never thought she was playing badly. I never thought she flattened out. I thought it was part of the progression. And for Coco Gauff, for me, it's never been a matter of if, it's just when. And I think when is now. I mean, she's shown us this summer that she's so capable to do things at the highest level and so competent and confident. And we talk about her forehand. Forehand's fine. She's going to miss some forehands. She's going to make some. She's not changing her forehand. She's not going to go to a continental forehand grip and chip and come in and do crazy. She doesn't need to. She can manage her game, and she's such a great athlete. She is such a great competitor and has so many tools. A lot of her mindset and success are going to be tied together, like I said about with Taylor Fritz. I think for Coco, if she can relieve the pressure valve on herself, not what we're saying, just on herself, then she'll hold the trophy up in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
She's still a teenager, but a veteran teenager, the oldest of seven teenagers on the women's side.
To their fifth
in the
U.S. Open.
In the U.S. Open.
For the fifth time.
That's wild, right? Yeah. First time in two decades, we had Americans sweeping Cincinnati and Canada on the women's side. So the doubles partner of Coco Gauff, Jessie Pegula, took Montreal. Once again comes to New York, John, as the top-ranked American in the world. What progress have you seen from her over the past year?
Yeah, considerable. I mean, this is sort of the anti-Coco. I mean, sort of the actuarial tables here are
much different. This was a player who, until her mid-20s, was sort of lucky to win a few matches, and now all of a sudden, winning begets winning. We saw her take that Canada title in the final, but we didn't see before that. She beat Iga, and she beat Coco. So not only did she win the title, but two really solid wins before that. She comes in, she's the third seed, trying to get to her first major semi. I think, in a way, she benefits from all this attention on Coco. I mean, Pegula's the higher-ranked player, but Coco's higher with the oddsmakers. I think that favors Jessie. She's got a couple of tricky matches. She's got Camilla Giorgi, who's hot and cold right off the bat. Svitolina, who made the semis the previous major, she's lurking. But I think Jessie could really do some damage in this event. And, again, I mean, she's just become such a lock as a player.
Yeah, I think, you know, the mindset, the perspective that Pegula has, that has served her well. And, you know, the race for her hasn't gone to the swiftest, hasn't gone, you know, to, you know, player bursting out of the gates early on. You know, she's had to work for it. She's had to go through injuries. She's, you know, had these different ebbs and flows over the course of her career. So not a lot seems to faze her, and I think that helps her in a place like New York, certainly trying to get to her first major semifinal. I think having to have a tough first-round match, a match you cannot look past in Camilla Giorgi. They've had some battles in the past, and Giorgi is always dangerous, especially on hard courts. I think that helps Pegula. It helps you relax just a little more. You just got to get down and play some good tennis from the start and not think about all of the other factors surrounding, especially for an American player. So I think that helps her, and maybe this can be the year where she can get over that hurdle. But she's definitely got a tough part of the draw.
She was asked, what's going to get you past the quarterfinal stage at a major? And she joked, winning a quarterfinal match. So she's got a great disposition and a great attitude.
She's not wrong.
No, she is 100% right. Both Jessie and Coco have already beaten Iga Świątek this summer, yet the Polish superstar once again comes in as the top seed, most overall wins this year, four more titles, Paul. But do you think she's a little more vulnerable this year?
Look, I think one of the hardest things is for a great player to manage the changes in their career. And you look at these stats and what she's done. It's been pretty spectacular. But remember how red hot she was. She was so dominant. And your question about losing a couple matches this summer, is that going to throw a damper on things for her mentally? I think it remains to be seen. One of the things that I'm so impressed with Świątek is her lack of fear in big moments. We saw it in Roland Garros when she was on the brink of losing in the finals. She doesn't back down. She really backs her game extremely well. So for her, a couple of losses shouldn't matter much. But so much is going to be about how she manages it, what her perspective is in terms of internalizing things, and her ability to trust in the big moment. I think she's my second favorite behind Coco, but there's no reason why she. Yeah.
Hey, now you're giving away your pick.
All right. Well, I just said in the last segment, in 2 weeks, if she does what she should do, Coco's going to win the title. But that's why we're here, right? I got to give opinions.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I like that. I like that. So you're going Coco and then Iga, John.
No good. I think, you know, we talk a lot about Iga's bakery and the breadsticks and the bagels, and she wins these sets. But, you know, she wins a lot of tight sets as well. And in those matches she has won since she – remember, she inherited that number one ranking. I mean, that sort of came almost as a battlefield promotion. Then she's really run with it. And in these last 18 months, yeah, she'll win these matches 0-1, and it's too good, and we all. But she's won some gritty matches, too. And I think especially coming off last year's U.S. Open when she didn't play her best and still came away with the title, I think that will fire her with more confidence than the knowledge that she can go out there and have these amazing sets.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Świątek, she stepped into that number one role and became so dominant. I think it's helped that she's had some challengers, that she's had some players pushing right behind her. Again, for any player, it's about motivation. It's about, you know, keeping the juices going. And especially when you win so many titles, so many one-sided matches as Świątek has done, I think you need to be pushed as well. And so maybe that helps her coming into this year's tournament, takes a little pressure off. I mean, there's, you know, a few players at the top now that we're looking at favorites. It's not just Świątek, and I think that's a good thing.
The new tennis balls could help her as well, going from regular duty to the extra duty. She likes the spin that she's able to produce. She won last year with regular duty tennis ball. Championship predictions coming up later on TC Live. Plus, as you see, every single morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, the four of us are with you leading up to live coverage on ESPN at noon Eastern. More TC Live after a quick break. Welcome back. The squads are set. Team Europe and Team World ready to face off in Vancouver, Canada for the 2023 Laver Cup. Don't miss Tennis Channel's exclusive live coverage of the three-day event beginning Friday, September 22nd. Can Team World defend their title? Well, we are leading up to first ball in New York, and USOpen.org is your online home for point-by-point live scoring, highlights, real-time stats, and draws. Visit the official tournament site at USOpen.org today. Steve Weissman back here in our studios. Prize money for this year's U.S. Open is a record $65 million. Each singles winner gets a cool $3 million, and by just making the main draw, you are guaranteed a payout of $81,500. But you can make more than that. That's right. Don't miss your chance at $100,000. Play Tennis Channel's Racket Bracket and choose the match winners in Flushing Meadows. Win cash prizes, including $50,000 jackpots for picking a perfect men's or women's bracket. Scan this QR code or visit tennis.com/play to enter. And hurry up. The deadline's Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. For a look at today's forecast in Queens, here's Fox Weather.
Hi there, I'm Fox Weather's Kiana Lewis, and here's today's U.S. Open forecast. We're looking at weather in Queens, New York, expecting a lot of cloud coverage and temperatures in the 70s. You can stream Fox Weather on your favorite connected TV device, like Samsung TV plus channel 1010, always on and always free.
Thank you so much. When we come back, a Banks that is too big to fail. We tell the story of Chris Eubank's rapid rise up the rankings on the other side. Ruben Anacone, Wertheim and Weissman back on TC Live at the U.S. Open. Before taking the court in New York, Chris Eubank sat backstage on Broadway for a special tour of Hamilton the Musical. And like the famous play, Eubanks is not throwing away his shot. And John Wertheim tells us how our fellow colleague is now in the room where it happens.
Do you recall how your favorite top men's player ended up his fall season last year? At the Paris Masters event, maybe the ATP Finals in the tournament. Here were Chris Eubanks' last five tour stops in 2022. Seoul, South Korea, Busan, South Korea, then Charlottesville, Knoxville, and Champaign, Illinois. So it goes when your ranking is nearly the same number as your weight, and you're hunting high and low for points, trying to crack the top 100. Eubanks was 26 then, trying to make mid-career upgrades while finding his modest finances. And he knew he was close to another level, a few matches here and there, but he was enough of a realist to deploy a plan B, taking his media career as seriously as his tennis career.
This has always been something that has intrigued me. I always loved the idea of sports media, sports broadcasting.
You likely know how the story broke. Unspooling that 6'7" frame and cracking the ball, he began to find some success. Winning began winning. In Miami, a run from the qualies to the quarters enabled him to earn his first double-digit ranking. Still, from there, he headed to three challenger events back in Korea, shaving his ranking and entering the top 75. In June, on the grass of Mallorca, he won his first ATP title and breached the perimeter of the top 50.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeff.
With a quarterfinal run at Wimbledon, he was into the top 30, virtually assured of a seed at the U.S. Open, more than $1 million wealthier than when he started the year. We've seen spikes and surges before. It's one of the great sights in tennis. A teenager ascending to number one, that's one thing. A player at age 27, after years in the minor leagues, showing an ability to hit big league pitching, cracking the top 30, that's something else entirely.
See you in the States.
And almost as rare. A late breakthrough like this comes with advantages. Eubanks can appreciate it. He's seen the less glamorous side of the sport. He can also process it all with maturity, avoiding temptations and resetting expectations, balancing confidence with humility, armed with first-hand knowledge of just how thin tennis's margins truly are. He'll keep at it now, play his first major as a seed, his home major, trying, as he puts it, to keep building. rest assured he will not be playing in South Korea or on college campuses this fall. Otherwise, who knows where this goes? Big banks will ride the wave. They'll ride it as long as they can. And whenever it does end, well, we'll keep that Plan B seat warm.
Could not be more happy for big banks, Chris Eubanks. By the way, Georgia Tech alum, and he is one of 27 players in singles, men's and women's, that have college ties. Take a look, John, at what he's able to accomplish over the past 12 months.
That's a lot of matches and a lot of wins. And we say that sometimes tennis is about winning. Sometimes it's just getting in the work in. Yeah, his work, he's moonlighting here, and I think we're getting the raw end of that. But if it means winning main draw matches, we're happy to give those days to another colleague. But no, I mean, I think you talked about Hamilton. I think he's really found this nice balance, really thread this needle between, look, I can appreciate this. I need to take advantage of some of the trappings that come with suddenly being this emerging star. And yet I also need to keep this in perspective. So it's much different than what we see a teenager break through when it's also fresh and new. I mean, I think there's a real adult approach to this, but also good for Chris. He's taking advantage of some of these new opportunities.
Yeah, talking about an adult approach, he bought a house. You got mortgage payments. You got to get that serve going. You got to come in. You got to attack. You got to play from your to your strengths. I think that's what Chris Eubanks is doing now, and I think he found a belief in his game, and it's difficult to get that. There's no formula. You know, you only can get it through playing and in real time and finding matches where things can click and you can build on that. And I think that's been a big part of the key. I mean, I remember having dinner with him and saying, you know, why can't you play that style on whatever surface? You know, he's talked to other players. We heard of Kim Clijsters, you know, conversations he's had with her, and, you know, great players that are telling you this. You got to start to believe at some point. Plus, all of the analysis he's been doing, it's been interesting to see and hear how his mind thinks, and I think he's bringing some of that to his tennis as well. It's not easy to marry those two together during your career, but I think he's got the perfect formula right now, and hopefully he can keep it going.
You love when good things happen to good people.
Absolutely.
I mean, he treated us to dinner when he was outside the top 150. Yeah. And now it's like, take us on a trip or something. Get us on that private jet, right? First round match, he's got Kwon Soon-Woo. They played a five-setter in Australia earlier this year. Big Banks won that one. What do you expect?
I think it's going to be, again, a tough match. I mean, it's a tough matchup. You know, the great thing about Chris Eubanks, I think the genesis of his success is all about coming to terms with who he is as a tennis player. And I got to speak a little bit with him about it with Ruan, his coach in Cincinnati. We were chatting about it, and they both seemed so clear about what he should do as a player. There wasn't a lot of indecision. And Chanda, you mentioned it. He's committed to a style of play now. He knows he's a high-risk, high-reward player, great power player, makes people very uncomfortable, and now he's living and dying by that sword. You saw the smile on his face for 2 weeks at Wimbledon. He was missing shots. It wasn't because he was playing the wrong way. He was playing Chris Eubanks tennis, and he was going to win or lose doing that. And if he continues to do that, he's going to get close to his ceiling, and wherever that ceiling may be, it's going to be exciting. But I think the biggest thing is what we talked about earlier, which is perspective. He is someone who's very thoughtful. He's really smart. He understands what he has had to do to get to where he is on the big stage now. And I think that perspective allows him some kind of freedom to go out and just play now, because he really is enjoying it. And for me, as a tennis fan, it's fun to watch. As a friend, I'm really enjoying watching the journey. It's our loss here at Tennis Channel, because he's a phenomenal analyst, but there's plenty of times for that. But he is a great tennis player and a better human being.
28 seed, ranked 145 in the world last year at this time. And by the way, Big Banks will be back with us at Tennis Channel for the Next Gen Finals in September. So you will see more of Chris Eubanks here on Tennis Channel. When we come back, it's our annual day one visit with tournament director of the U.S. Open, Stacey Allister. Everything you need to know about America's Slam and more on the way. As we take you up to first ball on day one of the U.S. Open. Don't forget, you can stay connected to the U.S. Open on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Join the conversation on social with hashtag U.S. Open.
Taking a look at our featured matches today, Arthur Ashe Stadium, returning women's champ Iga Swiatek first up, followed by an All-American match between last year's semifinalist Frances Tiafoe and Kalamazoo winner Lerner Tien. Then the night session begins with Coco Gauff and ends with the return of Novak Djokovic. Over on Louis Armstrong, it starts with two-time major champ Victoria Azarenka, plus former U.S. Open winner Sloane Stephens in action. Taylor Fritz plays Stevie Johnson. And in the night session, Milos Raonic bringing a 2-0 head-to-head record against Stefanos Tsitsipas, followed by the return of our very own Caroline Wozniacki. We now have the pleasure of welcoming in our friend and U.S. Open tournament director, Stacey Allister. Good morning, Stacey. It is so great to see you.
Good morning, Steve. This is week two of the U.S. Open.
That's right. Day one
of main draw. We've been hanging out here at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center for 6 days, and we had 157,000 fans come to U.S. Open Fan Week and watch qualifying last week.
The qualifying was incredible. I also heard Kids Day broke records, and the ticket sales for the actual tournament are through the roof. So tell me about the attendance and just kind of the fan engagement so far this year.
It was crazy. Just to give you context, we had 41,000 here on Saturday for Arthur Ashe Kids Day. And on Wednesday night when we did our Stars of the Open, our charity exhibition for Ukrainian humanitarian relief, we had 35,000 on site on a Wednesday. So I think Fan Week is no longer a secret. It's arrived, and it's really been part of our strategy to make the U.S. Open accessible to all, because it's 6 days for free. And probably the best moment was watching Novak practice on Arthur Ashe. And I was playing against Medvedev, and the stadium was two-thirds full. So that was super cool. And as you said, ticket sales are through the roof. 18 sessions are already sold out. So I just was texting someone, you know, they were saying, what session? I said, just go on and find a session where there are some available seats, because there's not that many left.
It's the biggest event in New York City all year long, Stacey. And you mentioned Novak Djokovic, three-time champ, is back. So tell me about the reaction of having him at the tournament again.
Oh, it's special. Special when he arrived. I think he is super excited to be back. And without question, every time he walked on the court, there was a roar. He participated in Arthur Ashe Kids Day. Played with Duke Perfect, which was kind of fun. And I know he's excited to kick off tonight.
So awesome to have Novak back. But let's talk Americans. This is the U.S. Open. We've got two American women in the top eight seeds, two American men in the top 10 for the first time since 2008. So what's been the internal buzz on site about having such great Americans this year's U.S. Open?
You know, when you've got 43 of them in the main draw and 30 individual in the doubles, we had 80 Americans here competing. So there's a good buzz, and we have this Stars and Stripes program that we try to make it a little extra special for our Americans. We created a commemorative gift to celebrate the 50 years of equal prize money. We call it the Talking Box. If you go online, you can see it. It's a message. It's a message from Billy to bump up our Americans. And so that's been fun. And just great camaraderie. You can really feel this U.S. team culture. It's fun.
Stacey, for me, there is nothing more electric than a night session at the U.S. Open, 20,000 plus, just going crazy. And it could go till 2 a.m. Now, some players, Iga Swiatek, have been outspoken about not wanting matches to go super late. So what went into the decision-making process about the night sessions this year?
Well, we looked at the complete reevaluation of the night session, and I wish there was a silver bullet. We've got to balance out certainly the health of the athletes. It's great at a slam that there is a day off, so there's recovery, and if we do have an athlete that plays late, we're certainly looking at putting them and giving them as much rest on that 36 hours and plus later. You need to balance out our broadcast partners and fans. You know, if we could get New Yorkers to come earlier, we could start at 6. But sometimes, as you know, the day session goes long. And it's pretty tough for them to get here before 7. And, of course, with ESPN, 7 is the time to start. So honestly, we're mindful that the athlete's health is what we're really focused on. If we have one of those late matches, then of course our referee makes sure that they get enough rest to come back on the next day after.
Well, it's going to be a special night session on Arthur Ashe tonight. We got Coco Gauff, we got Novak Djokovic. Cannot wait for first ball, Stacey. Thank you so much for your time today, and have a great tournament.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, once we talk to Stacey, the U.S. Open can begin. We are so close to first ball here. Back with more TC Live after this. Welcome back to TC Live. A reminder, the Tennis Shop, powered by Tennis Point, is the new online store featuring the latest apparel and equipment. So scan this QR code on your screen or visit tennisshop.com today to search a wide selection of brands and get the very same gear as your favorite pros. That's always fun. The last lead-up events to the U.S. Open finished on Saturday in Cleveland, Shanda. Lucky loser Sara Cerevis-Tormo needed a big comeback against Ekaterina Alexandrova.
Yeah, and it was all about the battle for Cerevis-Tormo all week long. But Alexandrova got off to a quick start. She was hitting big from the ground. The backhand is her big weapon. But here, things started to turn. Alexandrova up a set, still up 4-3, and kind of self-destructed there. It was curious that her reaction was so negative, she would not win another game in the second set. Cerevis-Tormo just feeding off of positive energy on her side of the court. And when you lose before getting into the tournament and getting a second chance, Steve, sometimes you play some inspired tennis. And she was making right moves at the right time, and at 4-all in the third, able to capitalize. Championship point here. Kept defending beautifully, got the miss from Alexandrova, and what a week, what a win for Sara Cerevis-Tormo.
How about this, Chanda? The third lucky loser to win a WTA title in the last 5 weeks. Before that, only three others did it in the past 50 years. Meantime, the men were in Winston-Salem, Paul, and Sebastian Baez on a hot streak going for his second straight title against Yuri Lehechka.
Yeah, I tell you what, this was a war. Baez has played some great tennis, also beating George in a tough, lengthy three-setter earlier in the tournament. These guys were grinding from the back of the court. Baez, so much fun to watch. Great footwork, big, powerful groundies. Gets that first set and continues playing some good tennis. Look, Lehechka, to me, is one of those big question marks. I think he is a terrific player, creates a lot of problems at every level of pro tennis, but can get a little tight, couple of double faults here and there, kind of here, which gave away the match and misses a few forehands, but that's a great win for Baez. Two tournaments in a row, says our good friend Mark H. from the San Fernando Valley.
I won 10 straight matches heading into the U.S. Open. That is good vibes. Well, still to come, it is all about the stars and stripes. Francis Tiafoe leads off our talk about the Americans in action this week. Plus, comedian Michael Costa gets warm and fuzzy with all of your favorite pros. And the WTA held a big gala for its 50th anniversary. We will show you all the stars that shine for the Golden Jubilee. Back on TC Live, last year, Francis Tiafoe became the first American man to reach the U.S. Open semi since 2006 when Andy Roddick was runner-up. He beat Rafa Nadal in the round of 16 for the biggest win of his career, and at that moment, Big Fo was no longer on the come-up. Superstar tones were made, and Big Fo, one of five seeded Americans at the U.S. Open, most since 2004. Overall, we've got 15 American men in first-round action today. Taylor Fritz taking on a fellow American in Stevie Johnson. A couple of Bruin national champions there at the top with Garone and McDonald.
Right.
Wow. I mean, just shiny. Benny Schelts in action as well, looking for his first main draw win at the U.S. Open. A lot at stake this event as we talk about Americans in action for Francis Tiafoe, John. He's taking on the Kalamazoo champ, Lerner Tien, first round. Back where everything changed, though, for Francis Tiafoe. So what do you expect to see from him this year?
Yeah, I mean, he's very open about this. He builds his season to peak at this event. And last year it did.
A little worried about the momentum. In the last two events, he lost to Stan Wawrinka and Milos Raonic. Those are not the kind of losses you expect France to take coming in on the North American hard courts. But I think to get by a young kid today, good for Lerner Tien. That's a real achievement. But Francis is a different plane of player, top 10 player. And then Francis, I can't think of an athlete, never mind tennis player, who feeds on crowd energy more positively than Francis. He's going to have a lot of crowd energy here in New York.
He certainly does, and the fans absolutely love Francis Tiafoe. We had another American right around his career high, Mackie McDonald, cracked the top 40 for the first time earlier this month, and he's got a real big opportunity because taking on Felix Auger-Aliassime, who has just one win since Roland Garros. How do you see this match going?
No, I think this is a great chance for Mackie McDonald, who is such a good mover around the court. Mentally, he's so tough. And I think this could be a tough matchup in terms of the weapons that Auger-Aliassime has. But the fact that he isn't playing quite as confident, the wheels that McDonald has, I think that's going to give Auger-Aliassime some problems. And when you aren't as confident, you tend, to go for a little too much. You miss a little bit more against a player who can get those extra balls back. So I think that's a real advantage in McDonald's favor. And look, let it all hang out. First round of the U.S. Open against a seed. Those are the kind of matches you want to relish. And I think he's going to look forward to that opportunity. Mm-hmm.
Look, it's a great opportunity, and Felix has struggled a bit since Roland Garros, and Mackie's played some great tennis. Look, Mackie's coming off a terrific couple of tournaments, and this one up in Canada, big win over Rublev, playing some real good tennis and feeling real confident and playing some of his best tennis while there, also taking out Raonic. He is a terrific player, a great mover, plays wonderful tennis on the hard courts. Had to withdraw in Cincinnati because he was ill. So we wonder how quickly that turned around for him. A little bit of a bug that was going around there. But I think it's a great opportunity. We saw all those matches. How about all those matches? Keep in mind, guys, all those flags, they're on the same side of the draw. That's the unfortunate part of it. They're on the same side of the draw. But still, a great showing for the Americans.
It means if they win, though, then we're guaranteed. Folks, moving on to
something. Power positive thinking. Look, I like that.
Glass half full. I take after you, Paul.
I like it.
On the women's side, ton of Americans in action as well. More Americans than any other nation, in addition to Coco and Sloan. Guess who's back? Back
Jen
again.
Jen Brady.
One of Tennis Channel's own is back. Taylor Townsend is in. San Diego champ Clervy Gunaway, one to watch. Former NCAA champion Emma Navarro, near her career high. So is Kayla Day. Katie Vollinets in there as well. But let's talk about Sloane Stephens. She's got a tough first-round match against Beatrice Haddad-Maia. What's the game plan for Sloane to win this one?
I think she's got to be ready to fight. I think she's got to be ready to battle. That is something that Haddad-Maia does so well, and she wins a lot of points, a lot of matches deep into the third set. So Sloane Stephens, she's got to be ready if, in fact, that match requires it. I think she's also coming in with some confidence. She's got some more wins under her belt coming into this year's U.S. Open, positive in that column. So I think that's a huge plus. And she's a U.S. Open champion. I mean, she knows how to play on these hard courts. Sometimes you get your way into a tournament and some magic can happen again. So you definitely can't count her out. But this is a good first-round test, I think, that's going to come down, to the mindset and the attitude that Sloane Stephens has.
Haddad-Maia, 1-2 since Wimbledon. And as you mentioned, Sloane made the quarters just last week. So things going in her direction. Danielle Collins looking for a little revenge today. Lost to Linda Fruvertova earlier this year. Had a great run in Canada. Danielle got some big wins there. Took Iga Swiatek to three sets, but then last match only won one game against her. So which Danielle Collins do you think shows up today?
I think the one that has some time off. I mean, she's played a lot of tennis. Danielle Collins has made, look at that. Who do you think she's texting walking through the gates like that? You know what she's saying? She's saying, I was only one spot out from being seated. I like playing on hard courts. In Canada, she had to qualify just to get into the main draw. That is not something we're used to seeing from a player of her caliber. Who was the last American to get to the final of a major play on hard courts? It was Danielle Collins. I think she's got a real chance to do a lot of damage this event.
Yeah, look, I think she's a dangerous hard court player. She's a confidence player. She starts off well. No one wants to be on the other side of the net because she hits the ball so big, so offensively. But Kvitova, we've seen her play before, and we know how talented she is. It's going to be a battle of kind of how consistently Danielle can start the match, I think.
When somebody wants revenge, I kind of want Danielle Collins playing for me.
You want to be in the trenches with her?
Yeah, I think she gets it done. We'll see what happens later today. But all the Americans looking forward to watching today at the U.S. Open. We've got our predictions ahead, plus all the top stories, big names, match breakdowns from both the men's and women's draws. It is day one of TC Live at the U.S. Open.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Back on TC Live, here comes Taylor Fritz, the top-ranked American man arriving on site. He's going to make his deepest run at the U.S. Open this year. Lost first round last year, taking on Stevie Johnson. Later today, a reminder to use your tennis knowledge for a chance to win $50,000. Scan this QR code or go to tennis.com/play to enter the Match Point Predictor Game. Answer questions about the action in Flushing Meadows to earn cash prizes and become eligible for that $50,000 perfect score jackpot. And hurry up. Deadline's Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Here are the questions you need to get correctly if you want to make the big bucks. Who's going to be the champ, right? Just pick the winners. Which American man, woman will advance the furthest? How many unseeded women will reach the quarterfinals? As we bring you back into studio, Steve and Chanda with you. Chanda, the people need your help. So at least for one of these questions, you're on your own for most of them. But how many unseeded women are going to make in that last eight club, do you think?
So if I give a little help, do I get into the pool for that 50K?
Sure.
See, that's the question I want to know.
Why not? I'll let you.
Okay, so I have looked very carefully at the draw. I have broken down each quarter of the women's draw.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm lying. I didn't do that.
You didn't do any.
But I'm
just making up answers.
I've looked at the draw, and I think there's a few sections where we could possibly get some unseeded players to come through. I'm going to say two out of the eight.
Two out of the eight. Last year we had one.
Okay.
It was Ila Tomjanovic. But 2 years ago we had two, and as you know, they went pretty far.
Yeah, finals.
All the way to the finals. Emma Raducanu.
Finals.
And Leyla Fernandez.
I mean, that was a dream year. And I think that gives every single player in the draw hope. And certainly when you're in those sections with seeds, I think they're most dangerous in the first rounds. So, I think we'll see some upsets. And I think, those are some good chances for players to get through.
I love the opportunity for hope, Chanda. And now the people know at least one of the answers is going to be a couple unseeded women making into the final eight. Time now for our daily warm and fuzzy segment with our friend Michael Costa.
This is so random.
That's great. Thanks, ball kid. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you. That was nice.
Wasn't that nice?
Yeah.
I know. She's the best. I mean, what does that type of harp music make you feel?
I feel like it could make you feel like you want to be in love.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is such a profound statement. And I couldn't agree with you more. It's just this feeling that music brings makes you want to be in love.
Yeah.
Dare I even ask about your love life now?
It's lifing.
It's lifing?
Yeah.
Okay, so that means it's trending up?
Yeah, it's trending up.
Okay, got
yeah.
it.
God, I hope he doesn't see this.
It's the
lifing. We got a definition of that word. You can see all of Michael Koss's great work on these warm and fuzzy segments at tennischannel.com and, of course, YouTube.tv. Coming up next, we get you ready with the top storylines of the 2023 U.S. Open. Do not go anywhere. Steve, back on TC Live. A reminder to download the U.S. Open app to follow your favorite players, track the latest scores, stats, match highlights, player news, and much more. It is available in the App Store and Google Play Store. Time now to go inside the press room with some of the top contenders on the men's side.
I wouldn't say, you know, adds a bit more the fact that I haven't played here for 2 years. It's just the feeling is pretty much the same. There's always, you know, this expectations and excitement and ambition to win the title. So that's pretty much the same this year.
I'm not focused on the defending champion, the points or whatever. I'm just focused on show my best level, try to improve in every practice, and let's see how it's gonna be the tournament.
Feeling pretty well physically and mentally. I want to try to play better than I did last couple of weeks. And let's see how it's going to go.
All three of those men have won the title before. Let's start with the three-time champ, Novak Djokovic, back after missing last year's tournament, looking to get to major number 24, tying Mark Record. He added two more majors this year. What makes you believe he'll add another, Paul?
Oh, because he's Novak. I mean, there's no other way to describe what he's been able to do for so many years. And we know what he can do on a hard court. We saw what he did in Cincinnati. And there's no reason it won't be more.
Hot take? I think he's motivated, energized, invigorated by this challenge he's gotten from this 20-year-old, from Carlos Alcaraz. I think, obviously, lost the Wimbledon final. But I think, in the long run, Carlos Alcaraz is a very good development for Novak Djokovic and his motivation. He showed it 8 days ago in Cincinnati, and I'm picking him like you, Paul. I think 24 is 13 days away.
Yeah, I think for most players, it'd be a disadvantage not having played here last year. For Novak Djokovic, you almost feel like it makes him fresher, gives him just a little more oomph to his game, and it's unbelievable the physical shape he's been in, how he continues to be motivated to push against matchups, against players who are so much younger. And then the shirt tear. I mean, that's next level, Steve.
Novak Djokovic. We've seen him do it in the past. I mean, that reaction after that win was something you see after he wins a major. What edge does that match, that one of the best matches we've seen all year, give him potentially as he could play Carlos once again in the final?
Well, considering they played 3 hours and 50 minutes for three sets, if they play the final series, that could be 7.5 hours or 8 hours.
Could be.
I mean, the most amazing thing to me about Novak is that as great as he is, he doesn't back down from any challenges. And you said it, John. I think the fact that Carlos is playing such great tennis is great for him. I mean, he's not afraid to win. He's not afraid to lose. He loves to prove himself. And with everything he's done, he really doesn't even have to prove himself, but he thrives on that. And that's why these 2 weeks in New York are going to be really important for him, and that's why he loves it.
They all love it. And the returning champ is Carlos Alcaraz, and he is the youngest number one seed in U.S. Open history, Chanda. He actually says he was a better player than last year, tour leading six titles this season, including Wimbledon, where he beat Novak Djokovic. So the question is, how does he handle those expectations defending a major title for the first time in his life?
I mean, we heard him in that interview. He seems to have the right mindset, thinking of it as a new tournament. It's not about defending. It's about playing your best tennis on this occasion, in this space, against these different opponents that he's going to face. And I think that's the right formula. He's got a terrific team around him. I think that helps with the experience as well. So, you know, he's got an advantage in so many different ways apart from just the physicality of his game and how special he is on court. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he gets things started, but he seems to be rounding into really good form. There were some questions after Wimbledon. He went back, he played on red clay, played Hopman Cup, maybe shouldn't have done that. Was he going to be a little tired? Is that going to take a little more of a toll? I think where he is right now after that final in Cincy, I think he's got to feel pretty good getting things underway here.
Sometimes we talk about the pressure of defending. That usually happens when the player hasn't done much since and their ranking is going to go off a cliff if they don't do well.
Carlos Alcaraz will be just fine. And I think also the fact that Novak will overtake him at number one no matter what, he doesn't have to worry about that. I think he's in a pretty good frame of mind. I just think that Cincinnati result, I think, really could loom large. Not just the result, but the way it played out, the fact that Novak at the end was the superior player physically. I think that might stick in the head of Alcaraz a little bit.
Yeah, he said the one thing that resonates with me the most, my least favorite term in sports, is defending. You know, nothing happens if he doesn't win this year. Not going to take away last year's title. All it's about is accumulation. And I think that's what great players realize. And I think you're right about I really think that it was important for Novak to win in a big moment like that, to come through under pressure. I don't think there's scar tissue. I think he's too young for that. But my biggest question for Carlitos is going to be, how does it last over seven matches? I still think he started cramping a little bit at the end of the match with Novak. We saw what happened in Paris. He's growing. He's 20 years of age. There's a lot of stuff going on in his body with metabolism and growth. And how hot is it going to be in New York? And how quickly and efficiently is he going to get through matches? Talent-wise, he is off the charts to me, the most talented player on the planet. So it's going to be a fun couple weeks.
Also, tougher half of the draw. He could face Jannik Sinner as well as Daniil Medvedev on his side. Novak Djokovic, a little bit easier, you would say. From the top seed to the top-ranked American man, that would be none other than Taylor Fritz. Big spread in Esquire magazine. Got two titles this year, but he has not, John, made it past the third round of a major this season and hasn't made it past the third round of the Open ever. Why is that going to change?
This is a nice chance to salvage his season. Taylor's a realist. He knows that you make your marks at those majors. He's 4-4 over his last eight matches at majors, but we know what he can do on hard courts. We know he's a good domestic player. He does well in North America and in the U.S., and I think he's in Novak's quarter, so we have to temper expectation a little bit, but I think he definitely gets beyond the third round, which is the best he's done this year in a major.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the mindset. And New York can be a tough tournament. You know, for some players, you either like it or you don't. It can be a complete change in terms of, you know, how your routines are, how you look to, you know, go about your tennis, how do you prepare. You've got to make some adjustments. I mean, it is truly craziness. But it's a great part of the year. And if you embrace it, and I think Taylor Fritz is looking to do that, I think, you know, this part of his career, having the last couple of seasons that he's had, really growing into playing at the top, you know, as the top American and at the top of the sport. I think that's what he's going to embrace, and I think that may be why it could be different this year. And he's got a good first-round match, I think a comfortable first-round match against a familiar foe, a fellow American. So I think how you start is critical in New York and work your way into the tournament. So I think that can be good for Fritz this year.
Playing an American at the U.S. Open has not been good historically for Taylor Fritz. 0-3 against fellow Americans, lost to Brandon Holt first round last year. Paul, you're a part of the coaching team for Taylor Fritz. What have you all been working on leading up to this first round match?
Well, look, I think the most important thing is the mental disposition for all the players, in particular for Taylor at this, his national event. Michael Russell's done an amazing job as a coach. He's a great coach. He understands the mental and the strategic that come into play. We talked about it a lot last week. I got to spend time with Michael and Wolfgang Oswald's done a great job taking care of Taylor's body. Look at how much Taylor's played this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's played a ton of matches. He's ready to play. I think the fact that he didn't do spectacularly in Canada and Cincinnati is actually a blessing for Taylor Fritz. And the reason he's 9 in the world right now, guys, isn't because his top level is good. The reason he's 9 in the world is because his average level got better last year. Okay, so he has to trust that in a major and has to know that he can get through whatever the situation is, play within himself, and trust the moment and realize, yeah, it's a U.S. Open, but there's a lot of tournaments down the road. If he can gain that perspective and free himself up and trust, he'll do just fine.
It's just another major.
Just another major.
Just another chance to win one of these turns. By the way, Taylor and all the Americans, it's the 20-year anniversary of Andy Roddick, the last American to win a major singles title on the men's side. We'll see if one of them can get it done. We're going to break down the women's field when we come back. The summer of Coco has been heating up. Is the time now for golf's first major title? Our experts let you know when TC Live returns.
Champion!
That's right, Lance. It's been a hot cocoa summer. Goff has won 11 of her last 12 matches, including two titles. Let's go inside the press room with her and the other top women's contenders.
It's been a great couple weeks for me, and just trusting myself. Obviously, you know, I have the new team around me, so seeing a different perspective can sometimes just change things completely. So I think I have a new perspective, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
I don't know if it's, I don't feel like any more confident than other times, to be honest. Again, tennis is so week to week. I mean, I won Montreal and then I got bageled and lost. So I think I go into looking at it as a new week, new challenges, new things to try to improve on, new ways to try and problem solve. That can be hard around a slam when there's a lot of excitement. So hopefully I can use that to my advantage.
I'm happy that I had time to practice a little bit more and to work on some technical stuff. But I'm really, you know, happy with my performance in Montreal and Cincinnati. So I get more like positive vibes for sure than before last year's tournament. But, you know, being a defending champion is not easy. So I'm kind of taking it easy and trying to do everything step by step.
Let's start our discussion with Coco Gauff. She's only lost three sets since Wimbledon, so playing spectacular tennis. Obviously got past Iga Świątek in Cincinnati. Shanda, do you think that singular victory was even more important than raising the trophy for her?
I think it was. You know, I think that got her, you know, to the trophy and to have that mindset and that belief. But the, you know, the hurdle of Iga Świątek was huge. And you look at so many draws where, you know, she was in Iga's section or they were meeting in the quarters, and you know, Grand Slams included, Roland Garros last year in the final. This was a huge hurdle for Coco Gauff during the week. And once she got over that hurdle, everything else, I think, seemed a little simpler. Even though Muhova was playing some terrific tennis, she's a tricky player, but she's starting to handle these different styles. She's starting to have the mindset Gauff is in terms of going after shots forehand and backhand. We talked about it during Cincy, where she was looking to run around backhands and hit forehands. You would have never seen that in Gauff's game, you know, even a year ago, even, you know, a few months ago. I think that Wimbledon loss, sometimes you have your lowest moments and you don't know when one of your biggest moments is going to be around the corner. That's tennis. I think it's the mindset she has of continuing to pick herself up and be positive, focus on the right things, and again, having a good team around her, adding some people to her coaching box. I think that has helped. But in a short period of time, you've got to give most of, you know, the reasons for the results to the player, because it was there. It just needed just maybe a little, you know, push, maybe saying something in a slightly different way. And I think for Gauff, everything's coming together at just the right time.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest thing for a superstar that's that young is to manage kind of plateauing. And as great as she is, she's plateaued a little bit. And so many people expected so much so quickly from her. I never thought she was playing badly. I never thought she flattened out. I thought it was part of the progression. And for Coco Gauff, for me, it's never been a matter of if, it's just when. And I think when is now. I mean, she's shown us this summer that she's so capable to do things at the highest level and so competent and confident. And we talk about her forehand. Forehand's fine. She's going to miss some forehands. She's going to make some. She's not changing her forehand. She's not going to go to a continental forehand grip and chip and come in and do crazy. She doesn't need to. She can manage her game, and she's such a great athlete. She is such a great competitor and has so many tools. A lot of her mindset and success are going to be tied together, like I said about with Taylor Fritz. I think for Coco, if she can relieve the pressure valve on herself, not what we're saying, just on herself, then she'll hold a trophy up in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
She's still a teenager, but a veteran teenager, the oldest of seven teenagers on the women's side.
To their fifth
in the U.S.
Open.
U.S. Open
for the fifth time.
That's wild, right?
Yeah.
First time in two decades, we had Americans sweeping Cincinnati and Canada on the women's side. So the doubles partner of Coco Gauff, Jessie Pegula, took Montreal. Once again comes to New York, John, as the top-ranked American in the world. What progress have you seen from her over the past year?
Yeah, considerable. I mean, this is sort of the anti-Coco. I mean, sort of the actuarial tables here are much different. This was a player who, until her mid-20s, was sort of lucky to win a few matches, and now all of a sudden, winning begets winning. We saw her take that Canada title in the final, but we didn't see before that. She beat Iga, and she beat Coco. So not only did she win the title, but two really solid wins before that. She comes in, she's the third seed, trying to get to her first major semi. I think, in a way, she benefits from all this attention on Coco. I mean, Pegula is the higher ranked player, but Coco's higher with the odds makers. I think that favors Jesse. She's got a couple of tricky matches. She's got Camilla Giorgi, who's hot and cold right off the bat. Svitolina, who made the semis the previous major, she's lurking. But I think Jesse could really do some damage in this event. And again, I mean, she's just become such a lock as a player.
Yeah, I think, you know, the mindset, the perspective that Pegula has, that has served her well. And, you know, the race for her hasn't gone to the swiftest, hasn't gone, you know, to, you know, player bursting out of the gates early on. You know, she's had to work for it. She's had to go through injuries. She's, you know, had these different ebbs and flows over the course of her career. So not a lot seems to faze her, and I think that helps her in a place like New York, certainly trying to get to her first major semifinal. I think having to have a tough first-round match, a match you cannot look past in Camilla Giorgi. They've had some battles in the past, and Giorgi is always dangerous, especially on hard courts. I think that helps Pegula. It helps you relax just a little more. You just got to get down and play some good tennis from the start and not think about all of the other factors surrounding, especially for an American player. So I think that helps her, and maybe this can be the year where she can get over that hurdle. But she's definitely got a tough part of the draw.
She was asked, what's going to get you past the quarterfinal stage at a major? She joked, winning a quarterfinal match. So she's got a great disposition and a great attitude.
She's not wrong.
No, she is 100% right. Both Jesse and Coco have already beaten Iga Świątek this summer, yet the Polish superstar once again comes in as the top seed, most overall wins this year, four more titles, Paul. But do you think she's a little more vulnerable this year?
Look, I think one of the hardest things is for a great player to manage the changes in their career. And you look at these stats and what she's done, it's been pretty spectacular. But remember how red hot she was. She was so dominant. And your question about losing a couple matches this summer, is that going to throw a damper on things for her mentally? I think it remains to be seen. One of the things that I'm so impressed with Świątek is her lack of fear in big moments. We saw it in Roland Garros when she was on the brink of losing in the finals. She doesn't back down. She really backs her game extremely well. So for her, a couple of losses shouldn't matter much, but so much is going to be about how she manages it, what her perspective is in terms of internalizing things, and her ability to trust in the big moment. I think she's my second favorite behind Coco, but there's no reason
really?
Why she, yeah.
Hey, now you're giving away your pick.
All right. Well, I just said the last segment in 2 weeks, if she does what she should do, Coco's going to win the title. But that's why we're here, right? I got to give opinions.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I like that. I like it. So you're going Coco and then Iga, John.
No good. I think, you know, we talked a lot about Iga's bakery and the breadsticks and the bagels, and she wins these sets. But, you know, she wins a lot of tight sets as well. And in those matches she has won since she, remember, she inherited that number one ranking. I mean, that sort of came almost as a battlefield promotion. Then she's really run with it. And in these last 18 months, yeah, she'll win these matches 0-1, and it's too good, and we all. But she's won some gritty matches, too. And I think especially coming off last year's U.S. Open when she didn't play her best and still came away with the title, I think that will fire her with more confidence than the knowledge that she can go out there and have these amazing sets.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Świątek, she stepped into that number one role and became so dominant. I think it's helped that she's had some challengers, that she's had some players pushing right behind her. Again, for any player, it's about motivation. It's about, you know, keeping the juices going. And especially when you win so many titles, so many one-sided matches as Świątek has done, I think you need to be pushed as well. And so maybe that helps her coming into this year's tournament, takes a little pressure off. I mean, there's, you know, a few players at the top now that we're looking at favorites. It's not just Świątek, and I think that's a good thing.
The new tennis balls could help her as well, going from regular duty to the extra duty. She likes the spin that she's able to produce. She won last year with regular duty tennis ball. Championship predictions coming up later on TC Live. Plus, as you see, every single morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, the four of us are with you, leading up to live coverage on ESPN at noon Eastern. More TC Live after a quick break. Paul Chan and John Steve back on TC Live. The big fella announcing his retirement after the U.S. Open. So John Isner, the swan song, got all the kids at home in Texas. Cannot wait to see what John Isner does. Also playing doubles with Jack Sock, who announced he's done with tennis after the U.S. Open as well. And Maddie Keys playing her first match tomorrow as well. Former finalist here at the U.S. Open as all the Americans arrive on site. Now, before every day at the U.S. Open, Steve Digner will give you his three to see, previewing a trifecta of top matches. Steve does an awesome job, so check it out. Tennis.com, all tournament. Today's got Chris Eubanks, Coco Gauff, and that blockbuster, Milos Raonic and Stefanos Tsitsipas. You may not believe who Steve picked for that one.
Yeah,
I'm picking up after you, Paul. Time to enter the social net. And how about this? WTA celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. They had a big gala in New York, and Chanda, all the stars were out.
This was such a terrific event, looking at all the pictures. I mean, we're here. We're holding the fort down,
yes.
So we could not attend. But terrific to see all the support, past, present, maybe some future champion, WTA champion players. But terrific support, and you know how outstanding 50 years of the WTA and still going strong.
Always great to see Tracy.
Tracy looked great. Coco Gauff gave an amazing speech as well. Our own Petco, and then it's the Golden Jubilee, and Coco dressed the part. Bianca Andreescu, sad that she's not playing in the U.S.
I have to say, yeah. Coco looks gorgeous. I love that look.
Talk about looking gorgeous. Yeah. Look at the guy on the end here.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a party until
superstar.
Gosh,
look at that. What color is that suit? I want that suit.
Orange.
Oh. PJ.
Burnt orange.
There's the
Pops
legend right there.
Pops was there.
Love that.
There's
love
the legend.
He's in his element.
Taste the tennis.
So good at
do a
these,
great job.
These events.
You could get so exhausted going from event to event. The week
I get exhausted just watching.
Exactly.
Venus was at this one as well. Penny, Judy Lerner, they always put on great events. City Taste of Tennis.
Penny and Judy do an awesome job.
The newly enhanced USOpenShop.org is the official shop for 2023 U.S. Open merchandise. Get U.S. Open gear for the whole family. Check out a variety of one-of-a-kind accessories as well. Visit USOpenShop.org today when we come back. Predictions. Who's going to win this thing? We'll let you know.
TC Live at the U.S. Open is brought to you in part by Tennis Express. We deliver tennis right to your front door. Order today, ships today.
Welcome back. We always love people, stars in the stands. Tennis Channel had its 20th anniversary party. Of course, Paul Wesley and Ian Somerhalder were there of Vampire Diaries fame. We got the Brothers Bourbon. Prakash was there as well, by the way, John.
Sure he was. Vampire Weekend, Vampire Diaries.
20 years, Tennis Channel.
Bravo. Happy birthday, guys.
Happy birthday. Happy anniversary. And we mentioned Big Banks went to see Hamilton. So did Alicia Parks and Beatrice Haddad Maya, Chanda.
Yeah, love this. You know, a little crossover. I still have not seen Hamilton.
Oh, really?
I need to get there. I'm jealous right now.
Neither am I. Neither am I. I'm waiting for my tickets.
Yeah.
Thanks
it's terrific.
Get me
love
tickets.
This.
Lin-Manuel Miranda there on the left.
Big
creator,
tennis
composer. Big tennis fan, yeah.
Yeah.
He knows his ball.
He'll probably be one of the stars actually in the stands.
Net rusher, baseliner, what do we know about his game?
He's got to be moving forward, right?
I gotta think so.
I
don't know.
Look at
we
stars
didn't have,
and stripes.
I don't think we got the music.
Yeah, where's our music? we have a drinking game here where every time Andy Roddick in 2003 is mentioned, Paul Anacone has to drink. But look here, we talk about the American presence in this event. Andy Roddick, 20 years since he won the title. Did you hear that? But here, look at this. We've got five American seeds, including two in the top 10 with Taylor and Francis. That is the most in 19 years. So there are a lot of Americans in the draw, but it is not just a numbers game. It is a quality game as well.
Good one, J.S.
Yeah, we're using
like that.
It.
Yeah.
That's not an earth-shattering.
We've got some good layers, though.
Exactly.
Good layers. A lot of young talent on that screen and more that were not on that screen as well. So
yeah.
Good signs.
And I like the variety of styles a little bit. You know, when you throw in
and
you know, Eubanks coming in. And
how about
pathways as well?
College, Absolutely. Turn pro when you're younger, do better when
Kalamazoo.
You're older.
Yeah, we got everything.
There's no right way.
Right. I like also that we had Roddick down there, plus we had Vince Spadia, plus we had Andre Agassi. I mean, like, Marty Fish. We had a little
diversity.
Lot of generations
it's too wrong
in 2004.
All right. Count?
Keeping count.
Well, we know your favorite drink. All right, it is prediction time. We have been waiting all tournament long and all day long for this. So, Paul, men's and women's champ, who do you have?
Well, I went as a really bad tease because I said it early
right.
in the show, right?
For one of them.
Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
Coco's going to win all things going the way they should be going. And Daniil Medvedev is going to return to the winner's circle, guys.
Whoa.
Don't sleep on Daniil Medvedev and my man Gilles Cervara. Do not sleep on those guys.
Medi Bear. Okay.
How are we going to get that if we have an Alcaraz-Djokovic final?
Exactly. I ruined the party pooper.
It's already
it's okay.
been
we love
ordained.
You still
okay. All right.
Yeah. Don't you feel like Djokovic and Alcaraz, they're like the two candidates for the job that are internal candidates. And yeah, we got to open this up and have this search for 126 other players. But we all know who's going to get it in the end.
Never know. That's why they're pulling the balls out there.
Wow, that is an inspired pick. We have not heard Medvedev dancing around.
I'm just saying, guys.
He's one of the betting favorites. No, I don't know. He's won this event. He's been number one. It's not crazy. But, I don't know. On the one side, I'm not picking either top seed. How's that for intrepid? But
don't pretend like you're going out on a limb.
I'm thinking Novak. I think it's Novak time.
Well, you're going way out on. I'm not picking either top seed.
No, that's
I'm
going to go with that. It's factual.
Boy, that's gutsy. Way to go, Joe.
Someone talked me off this. I think Coco time. And usually we're a little skeptical of momentum. I think momentum sometimes is a bit overrated in tennis. But, boy, all of a sudden. Don't hear about that janky forehand too much these last few weeks, have we?
Yeah.
We've got two Cocos. We've got a Joker, and we've got a Medvedev. What do you have, Chanda?
I'm going to go with Djokovic.
All right.
Okay. I mean, it's such a boring pick. I was trying to be
exciting. You guys.
You know,
no
Paul
guts.
Just upped the ante with the Medvedev pick out of the blue, but I'm going to go Djokovic.
Chanda knows what she's talking about.
I think this could be Coco's time. Mm-hmm. I do want to take a little pressure off of Coco, though.
Right.
And if it's not Coco, what about Ons Jabeur? I mean,
nice
would that
favorite.
Be to see her finally get over the finish line? Like, so I'm throwing a curveball. To the guys who are doing our craft.
I like that you brought up Ons because happy birthday, Ons. Today is Ons Jabeur's birthday. Hope you're watching the show. We love you. And Chanda just picked you to win the whole thing. Andy Roddick probably picking Ons Jabeur as well. Really pulling for Ons to win that first major title. I'm with you, John. I'm going Novak Djokovic, Coco Gauff.
Good.
Right. You can find the four of us every day, 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern, right here on Tennis Channel, your only pregame show for the U.S. Open. For Chanda, Paul, John, and our entire team, I'm Steve Weissman. Thanks for watching TC Live. We'll see you tomorrow morning.